Can't get enough of the podcast? Lucky for you, our video IQ platform on adorebeauty.com.au houses thousands of articles on skincare, makeup, haircare, and more. Plus, you can find a heap of video tutorials, ingredient spotlights, and brand breakdowns on our YouTube channel. Just click on Beauty IQ in the menu bar of the website or app, or search Adore Beauty on YouTube for more beauty content.
Adore Beauty acknowledges First Nations people as the traditional owners across the lands and waters of Australia. We recognise and pay our respects to elders past, present and future whose lands were never ceded. Welcome back to Beauty IQ, the podcast. I'm your host, Hannah First.
And I am your summer co-host, Melissa Mason.
So Hannah, I have an apology to make to you because I'm now in Darwin and it is soupy up here. Like it is soupy with humidity.
I have a friend that lives in Darwin and she said it's kind of like Thailand.
Exactly.
The humidity level.
Exactly. Yeah. And when we were talking
I would love
Thailand,
that.
You would love it. Actually, you would love it here. You would love it. But when you were in Thailand, you were talking about your hair and the humidity. And I think because I got
the braids.
Yeah. And I feel like I was like mildly empathetic about it, but I wasn't really like fully engaging properly with how crazy your hair goes in the humidity. I did my hair this morning and it's curly. So I've just given up on straightening it up here, but I was like, I've got some dead bits. So I was like, I'm going to like just put some little bends and waves in it, make it look fuller. Oh, just at the time I thought I wanted it fuller, but how wrong
like
I
a
was.
Lion's mane. That's what it kind of looks like.
Well, that's it. As soon as I stepped outside, it was like, boom.
I know the feeling. Straight hair girlies will never understand.
Never like, understand.
Humidity and curly hair.
It is huge. It's getting huger by the hour.
For everyone listening, we're on video. And I mean, granted, Mel has her laptop really close to her face, but her hair fills the entire, all the white space. So she's got like a white wall behind her and there's just her head. And then her hair fills every bit of white space. I love it. I think it looks great.
Well, you just have to sort of lean into the like not perfectness of it, right? Because I think for me, my curls have always been pretty organized. And in humidity, the organization just goes out the window. And that, I think, is key. Is I'm going to talk to some Darwin people about it at some point. If you're from the NT and you've got some tips, hit us up in the,
DM Mel.
The Facebook group or DM me, because I think that the trick is to not even try and control it, but just to like lean in.
The other thing that I should say about the humidity is that if you then leave it curly, like I would just leave it curly in Thailand and not wash it and just leave it and then trying to get the knots out. Oh my God.
No.
I don't know how knotty your hair is, but it
really
would,
knotty.
It would take me an hour to brush out all the knots from leaving it curly because you sweat so much. Your hair sticks to your back, sticks to your face, and then it goes kind of curlier and then it kind of gets matted. And I know people that have got curly hair and humidity and they just, it's always this thing of getting knots out. My recommendation is conditioner in the shower and brush it like with a wet brush.
Okay, gotcha. I'm going to start doing that. So, you know, it's going to be a journey, but we're all obviously going to follow along my journey because I'm going to make you, because I'm going to talk about it constantly on this podcast.
So what is on today's episode, Mel?
Well, for Cringy Convo, we are talking about Are Brazilians Over? Is the Bush Back? And then we have Taylor Broad joining us to talk about The Shit People Don't Tell You About Pregnancy, Part 2. And of course, the products we didn't know we needed.
So I think, Mel, you had suggested this topic and I wanted to
get throwing me under the bus, Hannah.
Sorry. It's very That's newsworthy because I've just, as I was researching, I did see Sydney Morning Herald had only just in March, probably after you suggested this topic.
Wow.
So I have done an article, The Bush is Back, The Return of a Fuller Look Down There. So can I hear, like, what are your thoughts?
Like, why did this come into your head?
Yeah, well, where's this come from?
Well, look, I don't know about everyone else listening, but I definitely was one of the gals. I feel like it started in the 2000s, but for me, it would have been in the 2010s. Really leaned into the look like a hairless seal from basically underneath your nose to your feet. It was like, if there is hair, it needs to go. And laser had just come in, right? And I was lasering everything known to man. I was like into it. And look, some laser I am thankful for my own personal choice. And obviously this is a personal choice, everyone. But like I lasered my underarms and now I have barely any hair under there and it makes like shaving heaps easier. I just shave off the little blonde ones. I lasered my lower legs and I'm Greek and so I am like hairy. Like when I was 14, mum would only let me shave to my knee and so I had like little hairy bike shorts essentially because like I had like proper dark hair
to the knee. What was the reasoning?
Because I think she didn't want me to grow up too soon and I think she thought
still
for some reason
you
that meant
shave half of them.
I don't want you to grow up too soon.
So you can only shave half your leg.
And then you can just be shamed by everyone at Little Athletics when you wear your little red bike short and then you have like a little hairy bike short that extends from the end of them. Oh my God. Oh, you're bringing up my trauma here, Hannah. Anyway, so I really got into laser and one of the things that I did was full Brazilian laser and I went for a bazillion rounds and only really recently because I also feel like, I don't know if this happened to you as well, but like Tom, my partner, is probably my longest, he is my longest relationship. And it's also the one that I've been most comfortable in. And that's a beautiful thing. Love is gorgeous, right? But it also means that then you're like, well, I just actually can't be bothered dealing with this bush area. So I just stopped maintenance. Like I just couldn't be bothered. Like, because I would go, I would say I got maybe 80% reduction on hair from all of my laser Brazilians, but there's still this bit that comes back. And I would usually just go every like couple of months and get it waxed off. And I just kind of stopped doing that. And then I was like, how much can I grow back? Like, will it grow back? And spoiler alert, it won't. And now I'm like, I got all of this permanently removed from my body. And now I kind of wish it was there again. So that's kind of where this came into my mind was like, are all of us Brazilian laser girlies having some regrets?
I would say it depends on the person. And like I probably don't – I'm the same as you. I had everything lasered pretty much. Nail trail, which was great. It actually never grew back. Underarms, full leg, Brazilian. And I guess it's just because it's done. I don't think about it. The reason that I did start to think about the bush was that there's been two movies that I saw recently, Poor Things and No Hard Feelings. Did
yes.
you see those?
I've seen Poor Things. I haven't seen No Hard Feelings.
Oh, full yeah. frontal nudity apparently is like back. And in both scenes that I saw recently, they both had a full bush.
And I was jealous.
Poor, yeah. I don't know. Okay. Poor Things was not a movie to get jealous about. Wow. That was funny. So Poor Things was, I think, set in the 1800s, so maybe less relevant. But No Hard Feelings was sort of was in present day. So you were jealous in the nude scene in Poor Things.
Well, I was jealous. Okay, can we clarify here that I was not jealous of Poor Things, of Bella's
brain
experiences,
transplant.
Which were, yeah, interesting.
Horrible.
I looked at that and I thought, I want my bush back. Oh, I want the option to have my bush
the
back.
Option.
I want... The option to have it is what I kind of miss. Is it's like I did this very permanent thing. And I reckon, you know who I reckon relates heavily to this? Is anybody that plucked their eyebrows into a tiny strip.
True. And then they never
in like
and then people get them that maybe they'll have tattooing for the Brazilian area eventually.
No,
that's a joke.
That would look, no one make that business. Nobody do it.
But this is a fun little fact about those movies. And this was from that article I mentioned before. Do you know what a merkin is?
Yes. The little stick on hair.
Basically, a merkin is a toupee for the pubic area and is made from real human hair carefully embroidered. So you could get a merkin instead of...
I could. I don't think they look the same in real life, Hannah, when it's not on a movie set.
I did think when I was watching those movies that they were using that. I didn't realize it was a merkin. I thought that was a real bush going on, but it obviously is a merkin. Mm. I think that's for modesty.
Well, I get that because if I was Emma Stone, I'd probably also want a merkin so that then I can just do a nude scene without having to fully do a nude scene. So you've heard her on Bride to Be, but today we've got Taylor Broad joining us for part two of The Shit People Don't Tell You About Pregnancy. Welcome, Taylor.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we've already done a part one of this segment. In part one, we talked about nipple changes, snoring, discharge, and stretch marks on the bum. But Taylor, what we want to hear today is, how does life actually change since you've had a baby?
Well, all of those things you just spoke about are very much on point. They are big changes you experience during pregnancy and after birth as well. However, there's a few things that I guess I can touch on in the sense of more internally after having a child. For me, it was definitely grieving my old life. It's so hard because it's such a special time in your life where you're getting your child and you're so happy and you're so overwhelmed with all of this love for them. But no one really touches on the fact that you are actually grieving something as well. Like it is a loss in a way. Like you're gaining so much, but you're also losing a huge part of yourself, even in the sense of just being able to go to the shops and not have to plan it around whether this child is going to cry or need food and all these little things that you just never thought of before, and realize how easy it was to do all of those things is kind of taken away, whether it just be for a small period. I can definitely see that light at the end of the tunnel now, but in those especially first 6 weeks, everything seemed so hard and so overwhelming, and I was grieving a huge part of my life. And I think you always hear the saying about you find out who your real friends are during phases of life, like weddings and babies and all these different things. And I definitely noticed a few friends drop off, and that was a grief in itself as well, because it was kind of like, well, did you not want to be friends with me? Was it more that you just liked going out with me or different things like that? So that was hard.
Yeah, totally.
And I think at the end of the day, it's like, they call it the rebirth when you have a child, and it truly was that, but with a rebirth, there's also grief. So that was a big transition. Another one would definitely be, and it's probably something I'm experiencing more recently in the sense of being the primary carer. I was really blessed at the start where my husband, he plays AFL, and he had just finished the season pretty much 3 weeks after I gave birth. So he was a full-time dad for a lot of those beginning months, and I had a lot of help and support, and we don't have family over here in Melbourne. So I was really lucky to have him 24/7. But then once he went back to work and I became the primary carer, it's hard. It's like, I don't resent him at all. I resent the situation sometimes, in the sense of he can just leave the house and not have to think about the baby bag. Has she eaten enough today? Will she need an extra 5 nappies when we go out today? What clothes should he dress her in? Like, none of that goes through his mind. He just gets to walk out of the door and go to work. Whereas for me, when I started tiptoeing back into the workspace, as the primary carer, I didn't just walk out at the door and go to work. Like, I had to have everything ready for the babysitter. I had to think about all the plan B, C, D, everything that could go wrong that day, and have all of that planned out as a, like, okay, here's what you do in that situation. And it became this like mental load that I realized as the primary carer, only I have to take on. And that can be quite overwhelming in itself. And he'd come home and I'd have this, as I said, not resentment, but this annoyance of, well, it must have been nice for you to go to work today and just go to work. Whereas for me, it was like, I went to work, but the whole time I wasn't thinking about work. I was thinking about what was going on at home. They're probably the two biggest things that have changed in my life post birth. But again, like, then there's the most amazing things that have changed in my life too, in the respect that I'm so much more grounded, and I have so much more, in the weirdest way, self-love, because I look at this little girl and I'm like, I wouldn't want you to want to change anything about yourself. I just want you to love every single thing about you, because I love every single thing about her. And then that kind of reflects into that whole inner child within myself. And I think that's been a real healing experience for me too. And I mean, she's crawling and she's saying dad and mom, and it's so beautiful. And I have all these happy moments with her as well. But I think the two things that no one really warns you about, and again, they probably just don't want to scare you before you have a baby, but it would definitely be, yeah, that grief and the load of being the primary carer.
I feel like I can't relate at all to any of that. But when I think about it for myself, just because I haven't had a baby, but when I think about it, I'm like, when, you know, when you're like finishing high school, you might do uni and life's like really chill. And then you go from like that life to, this is so not the same, but you go into full-time work and you're like, what is happening?
It's definitely like that. Also speaking on that, like when you go to a full-time job, more often than not, you know what you're doing. As a mother, you have no idea what you're doing. You're thrown into a full-time job, but you're learning on the job.
But you don't, you've not been trained for.
I have no, like I'm winging this. I have no idea what I'm doing. It's so 24/7. Like even when you go to sleep, you're still waking up in the middle of the night thinking of things that need to be done, or has she had enough sleep, or is she cold, or is she warm? And it's like there's no experience to teach you that, unless obviously you've got a really close sister or brother that has had a baby and you're there all the time. Like there is no way of understanding what you have to do or really prepping for it, because at the end of the day, like a child changes every day. You think you've nailed it, and the next day they're like, surprise, I don't sleep anymore. So it's learning on the job.
So speaking of, how have you been sleeping?
It's this really, my husband and I were laughing about it the other day. It's this really weird thing when you have a child where I swear you are designed as a human to forget how much lack of sleep you had in those first 6 weeks so that you have another child. Because looking back, like right now, I'm like, isn't that hard? We slept, didn't we? And then I think properly and really like think about it. And I'm like, oh my God, we're awake every hour in those, definitely in the first 4 weeks where I was feeding her every hour. Like that is not okay. They go through this phase where they all of a sudden decide that they're going to sleep 8 hours in the night, and you think you've nailed parenting and you're never going to need sleep training and we could do this 7 times over. Like, what are people whinging about? And we thought we were killing it. We went to Perth and all of our friends were like, oh my God, this child just sleeps through the night. This is amazing. And we did. We fell into this trap of this is so easy. And I think probably during that stage, that was when I started getting, I guess you'd call it night terrors. And it was because I was breastfeeding. And although she was sleeping through the night, I was waking up thinking she was in the bed. And my husband tells his story to everyone where one night he could feel me digging under him. And he was like, what are you doing? And I was clawing through the mattress in my sleep, thinking that she had fallen asleep in the bed with us, which she has a crib. She was never in the bed with us, and that he had rolled on top of her. And I would like wake up traumatized that she was in the bed with us, and that would keep me up at night more than she did. But then you hit the 4 month sleep regression, and that is joy in itself. And it's kind of where they're finding their sleep cycle and they're starting to wake up but don't know how to self-settle to go back to sleep. So that was an experience, and through that we ended up getting a sleep trainer, and that's been amazing. And she's really routine based, so she knows exactly when, like, you hear her start whinging, you look at the clock and she's 2 minutes off her bedtime. So she's been really good since we've done that. Touch wood, she's been sleeping through the night. Last night was an exception. She woke up 4 times, but she's teething. But it's just one of those things, like, as I said, you think you've nailed it, you think you know what your baby's doing, and then a week later they change. So sleep is just something you have to let go of as having any control. The baby has full control and you're just living in their world.
I always say that about my niece. I say it's Lexi's world, we're just living in it, because like every dinner now is revolved around her. Oh, like our,
for sure.
Not just her parents, like our whole extended family. On to breastfeeding. So dealing with oversupply is pretty common for breastfeeding moms. How have you handled it?
Yeah, I think originally I thought something was maybe wrong with me, because I don't know, like I had never heard of oversupply before. Everything was like if your baby doesn't latch or if you have undersupply, and there was all this kind of information out there for what to do if you couldn't breastfeed. But there was no information that I'd been told prior or that I could really find a lot about, in the sense of what happens if you're breastfeeding and you have too much supply. And I didn't really realize the repercussions of oversupply in the sense of colic and her not being able to burp herself. And it was a really hard journey originally, because I've got this child that is wanting to feed, and she'd get to my boob and no exaggeration, my boob would explode on her. She would be covered in milk, which would then give her baby acne. And then she'd be screaming because she was covered in milk, but so hungry. And I was just like, oh my God, this is horrific. There was definitely moments there where I was crying, saying, I can't do this anymore. And then I spoke to a breastfeeding consultant who was amazing. She kind of just kept being like, let's just get to next week. We'll do another call. And if next week you're still hating it, we can reassess. And each week I was noticing it was getting better. The problem, I think, for me also was because Samara had colic, I felt like her being so upset was my fault. And it was like, am I being selfish by wanting to breastfeed my child because she's then so miserable and so upset and she's not able to digest properly and burp properly because my boobs are quite literally exploding into the poor child's mouth. So that was a real battle between, I mean, everyone says breast is best, but then it's like, no, a happy baby is actually best. But then for me, it was that battle of, but like, I can breastfeed her. I can see that she's getting nutrients from it, but then is that the best option because she's actually so miserable from it? And it was such an internal battle. Like my husband, we had this conversation where I said to him, I don't need a solution from you. I just need to whinge and you just need to sit there and like, I don't want advice because my brain is doing the advice for me. I just need you to sit there and hear me out. And I would every day, it was like, I'm quitting. I don't want to do this. I'm not breastfeeding anymore. And then 2 hours later, she was on my boob. So we got there, we got through it. It was a really hard journey. I think the best thing for me was I actually did put something on my socials and I had a lot of people come back saying they had experience the same thing. So it did make me feel less alone. And that's something that just comes with being a mother, in the sense of you feel isolated and this is only happening to me and this is only my child. But then when you really talk to people and get rid of that taboo of like, no one needs to know what's going on, you kind of realize that a lot of people are going through this too. And there was a lot of great suggestions and we got through it and she's not on the boob anymore. But it was, I can't say I enjoyed the breastfeeding journey, but it was a journey and we did it.
So I've heard about this terrifying thing called lightning crotch, which for anyone who doesn't know, it's this sharp, sudden pain in your crotch when you get into the third trimester. It sounds terrifying. Did you experience that?
Now, this is so weird, but when we were in school, I don't know like if this was just my school or it was just weird. But anyway, the girls would literally just go and like hit you in the private area and you would get this like, oh, pain. And I don't know what it was. Like, it was just this thing. It was so weird. It's so inappropriate now I think about it. But that's how I describe lightning crutch. It feels like someone has just gone up and whacked you straight on the bone. And you would get it randomly. Like you'd just go over to pick something up and you would get it. Or mine for me was definitely in the last couple of weeks when I would walk the dog. And if he would pull and I would tense kind of my pelvic floor to pull him back a bit more, I would get it then. So I'd just be randomly on a walk and you'd just hear me be like, oh, and I'm like, oh my God, people are going to think what is wrong with this woman. But it goes away. It definitely does go away. It's probably a bit like sciatic nerve pain as well. Like it just will hit you randomly, but the second you give birth, it's like, oh, that's done.
Can't wait for that. Lightning. I can't believe that that's a thing.
It really is.
So interesting. And finally, are there any Holy Grail beauty products that you've used throughout your pregnancy that you would recommend?
Yeah, I use Pure Mama skincare, which was a great oil that I put all over my body, but especially on my bump, just to try and avoid those stretch marks, but also just keep the bump hydrated. Another one that I swear by is obviously Glorio. I think everybody uses that. But then something that I found really interesting and didn't really learn until a bit later in my pregnancy is your skin pigmentation changes because your stomach is so stretched. And we went on our baby moon and I, having Lebanese skin, touch wood, had never been burnt before. And I would always kind of like laugh at people when they'd be whinging about how much a sunburn hurt. And I was like, how much could a sunburn really hurt? Oh my God, traumatic, burnt my entire stomach. I was in the sun for not even half an hour just swimming, but because I was floating and my stomach was above the water, it got burnt. It was so painful. So I definitely, definitely recommend sunscreen. Yeah. Just put it on the bump. Every time you put an oil on, apply the sunscreen on top as well. Because I think even today, like the trend is the bump is now on display and everyone wears the little crop tops.
Yeah, so
true. You will burn your bump. Yeah. Put sunscreen on the bump. So they're definitely my three tips.
Well, Taylor, thank you so much for joining us again. Well, you're back on an Adore podcast. We've loved having you and hearing about it. You've made me feel really calm about pregnancy.
You'll be fine.
Thank you. Not that I'm not pregnant, guys. That was not an announcement. My product I didn't know I needed today is the Skinstitute Gentle Cleanser. It is 200 mils. It's massive. I've got it in my shower at the moment.
It's huge.
It is huge. Yes. And it's obviously on the more affordable end of kind of cosmeceutical skincare, which it is under the cosmeceutical category at Adore. I really love a gentle cleanser. My day-to-day cleanser is always a gentle cleanser, and I've just started using this one a week ago and really liked it. It's obviously gentle enough to use every day. It is a gel texture, and I really love gel cleansers. I don't know why. I feel like it's a little bit more hydrating, but it gets like makeup off really well. Like, really love a gel cleanser. It'll get rid of any dirt from the day. It will obviously get rid of makeup. It's got vitamin B5. It's got vitamin E, goji berry, green tea. Yes, and it has aloe vera. That's what I thought I was smelling. And that aloe vera will really help to soothe the skin. So if you have like sensitive skin, irritated red skin, this would be really great for that kind of, you know, skin concern. The other thing Skinstitute kind of recommend, depending on your skin type, I guess if you were double cleansing, you might use this as like the first step. You can then kind of use it in conjunction with, if you've got an oilier skin type, you could use something that has glycolic in it, like the Skinstitute Glycolic Cleanser. And then if you had like a dry, sensitive skin, you could then follow it with a like hydrating mask. But I think this would be suitable for like any skin type. I have oily skin and I find it's like great to get rid of like all the kind of oil and dirt. Mm. What is your product?
When I was in Japan, I went into one of those beauty stores and I was like, oh my gosh, brown liquid liner is everywhere, which I think I did mention on the podcast that there was just brown liquid liner, more than black you could find brown. And then, of course, because it's everywhere and I want what everyone else does, I was like, I've got to try this. So I bought one. What is so great about it is that I'm finding brown liquid liner a way better alternative for my eye shape and for my eye color than black. So I was always using black. And basically for me, this is like one of those things where I've done it for so long, I don't even remember why I started doing it. But when I don't wear liquid liner, and it's like a thin line, not like a really thick one, it's not a cat eye, it's just like follows my lash line, I find that then my lashes look full up. And without it, I feel like my eyes look quite small. And it's probably just in my own head, right? But I mean, is that not makeup in general? You just do what makes you feel good. So for me, wearing liquid liner has always felt good. And I was always loyal to black because here in Australia, it's kind of really the number one thing that you can find. Like, I was actually struggling to find an example, an alternative to the one that I've got to talk to you guys about. But over there, it's everywhere. And I'm like, we need to be doing more of this because I feel like with the brown liquid liner, especially in the daytime, it's a really natural look. It's almost like on par with if you did like a really gentle smoky eye, maybe, because it really blends into your lashes. It doesn't look overpowering. It's just kind of really subtle. Big fan. Anyway, I'm going to stop going on about it because I feel like I've convinced everyone. The one that I'm recommending is one that I've tried in black. So therefore, I can stand by it in brown. It's the Maybelline New York Tattoo Liner Ink Pen, and it does come in brown, and it's really, really good on the more affordable side of eyeliners, but has like pro level results because it's got that little felt pen tip, which is for me crucial because when they're too firm and it's just like you get that weird, like I get like a weird squiggly little line and it like catches on every dry patch of skin. Whereas with those, it just gives me a really smooth line. So big fan, and like that'll probably be the one I replace this one with when I run out.
Talking about products, I don't know if you saw Oscars. Did you watch them?
I did. I watched parts of it. I watched Emma Stone get her award with the dress and the zip was broken. It was so sweet.
Poor Emma Stone, relatable though.
She's just us. She's us.
She's so cute. She is. And I loved I'm Just Ken.
I haven't seen that yet and I need outstanding. I need to watch it.
So good. So not Oscars. I loved it. But one thing about the Oscars was product related. Was Vanity Fair after party. Kim Kardashian was there on the red carpet.
She was.
My mum texted me, how good did Kim look and how good did her makeup and her hair and her brows? We're using two of my favorite products.
Oh.
Which was so nice to see. So these are my two, like, probably my top two brow products.
Yeah.
So it's the Benefit Precisely My Brow. Mm-hmm. It is like a really thin pencil style. It's not a pencil. It's a, you know, you twist it up.
Like a thin crayon.
Yeah, like a really thin crayon. And I do it, I just do really fine hairs, but I do it not with hardly any pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I think I use the shade, which is number 3, and I do it really, really finely. And then she was also using the 24-hour brow setter by Benefit. So then I'll use that after. I love the little mini one. If I'm traveling, I'll just mm-hmm. take that like little mini 24-hour brow setter, but they've got like the full size as well. Both of these products are my favorite. I love them and I always go back to them. And it was really nice to see Kim
wearing your product.
My brow tips.
Like, Kim, you've been listening to the podcast, I see.
Yeah, we'll see you all next week.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe and tell your friends. It helps other people to discover us. And we'd love to know what you thought about this podcast. So if you could leave us a review, that would be much appreciated.